Radio Prague News.
A Czech fighter jet mission securing Iceland's airspace has been extended. The Czech Red Cross is sending aid to Ukraine. And police on the Polish-Czech border are searching for a Czech man considered armed and dangerous. The Chamber of Deputies has extended a Czech fighter jet mission in Iceland from 5 to 9 weeks in response to the recent annexation of Crimea and the situation in Ukraine, Defense Minister Martin Stropnický has revealed. The Czech Republic was asked to prolong the mission of monitoring Iceland's airspace by NATO, the minister added. According to Mr. Stropnický, Russia had increased activity by its air force not far from Iceland's airspace. 4 supersonic Gripen jets and 75 Czech military personnel are to take part in securing Iceland's airspace from October to December. The cost of the mission will be around 33 million crowns. Earlier, the Czech Republic took part in helping guard the airspace over the Baltic states. The Czech Red Cross, in cooperation with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, is sending 1,600 tons of medical supplies to Ukraine. It is already the 7th delivery of humanitarian aid from the Czech Republic. Earlier this year, the Czech government approved 50 million crowns in aid to Ukraine for projects aimed at reconstructing health, educational, and social facilities, as well as infrastructure projects across the country. Czech hospitals have also provided treatment to more than 40 injured Ukrainians as part of the Medevac program of evacuating Ukrainian citizens in need of medical treatment. Dozens of Czech and Polish police are searching for a 60-year-old Czech national in the border area around Bruntál, suspected of having committed a violent crime of grievous bodily harm. The suspect, whose name is Bedřich Špurný, is considered armed and dangerous, and the police have appealed to civilians not to try and stop him themselves. 40 Czech police officers in the night and early morning hours tried to pinpoint the suspect's location, also with the help of a helicopter and trained dogs. Being so close to the border, they enlisted help from their Polish counterparts. Czech paleontologists revealed on Friday the details of the discovery of part of the skeleton of a Mesozoic plesiosaurus dating back around 75 million years. The discovery was made in Antarctica. Zdeněk Venera, the director of the Czech Geological Survey, confirmed the team also uncovered a number of fossils of new species of animals and plants. Skeletons of fossilized spongia and petrified wood were among the oldest angiosperms from Antarctica, and the rarest, he stressed. Over the course of several years, the scientists collected several thousand specimens. The CGS scientists have completed 10 expeditions in terrain on the Antarctic Peninsula since 2003. And finally, the unique CV-22B Osprey aircraft landed at the Moshnov International Airport in Ostrava on Friday. The unique half-helicopter, half-plane used by the U.S. Air Force's Special Forces will be displayed at the annual NATO Days and Czech Air Force Days air show, which will take place over 2 days and gets underway in Ostrava on Saturday. Thousands of visitors are expected to attend. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's it for the news for now.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, imagine streets free of cars. For many in Prague, that'll become a reality for one day at least this coming weekend. We'll have all the news from the world of Czech business and in the arts, what the aftermath of the Velvet Revolution meant for Czech writers. All that's coming up in today's program. People in Prague will have a unique opportunity to see the city from a completely different perspective this coming Saturday. Dozens of streets in the capital, as well as in some other major towns, will be closed to traffic and turned into temporary pedestrian zones as part of the event Zažít město jinak, or Different City Experience, as it's called in English. Ruth Frankova discussed the project with Jan Schindelar, who is one of its organizers.
The basic idea is to somehow support in educational way the traffic calming in not only Prague, but actually in other major larger cities in the Czech Republic. The main factor or characteristic of Zažít město jinak is that the traffic calming is actually pursued from the bottom principle using local community support. That means that actually locals have the possibility to show on the difficulties or the disadvantages of their living, let's say in this particular case in Prague.
Now, how does it look in practice? You close streets to transport and open it up for pedestrians?
Exactly. All of these street and neighborhood parties happen in one day, on the 20th, this Saturday. It's not necessarily only streets, but there are also different sidewalks or even places, usually old playgrounds that nobody has been using for several years. And they are closed for car transport, and it's open for pedestrians, for cyclists. And with the open streets, there is either just, you could say, like chill out zone with tons of sofas and just possibly to sit down, read a book, or places where you can actually see the different stands of all community actors. That means you can see local NGOs, different institutions, and they always present their work. They have different presentations, group discussions, and so on and so on. So it's very, very active.
I believe that one of the aims of the festival is also to strengthen the sense of community here in the Czech Republic. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. You could say that there are two major goals of Zaží město jinak. First one is somehow stressing the need of traffic calming. And the second one is that you cannot achieve this goal without involving community. You cannot just make them want to do it, but you actually are using their support in achieving this goal.
Would you actually say that the public attitude has changed over the years and that perhaps the sense of community here in the Czech Republic is becoming stronger than it used to be in the
Completely.
Past?
Completely. And it's not just from the point of view of citizens, but also from local authorities and so on, because you cannot just make your party as you want to, but you have to cooperate, you have to get different permissions and support from, let's say, local authorities. And so it's very important that all these different parts of the society actually cooperate together. And one also very important thing is that since these 9 years, we actually changed a bit the structure of the, you could call it the project. That means we are just coordinating. We have some basic principles. We are helping with the know-how to the locals. But actually, it's the locals' job, you could say, to actually perform and to do these parties or street festivities.
What are the highlights of this year's event?
Yeah, well, I think that the major highlight is actually that the streets will be opened and you have a one-day opportunity to see Prague from a completely different perspective, very calm, very open-minded, and very open to the people of all generations, of all interests. But to answer your question, you can try to take a little ferry, for example, from Karlín to Holešovice for the first time. You can go to many, many places with local historians or local people just for a walk where they will explain and tour you about how it looked a couple of decades ago. You will have different little theaters for children. You will have a little circus in Plaská Street. So it's pretty hard to actually to stop naming all of these possibilities and opportunities.
Jan Schindelář, one of the organizers of a project in which many Prague streets will become pedestrian zones on Saturday. Now for a roundup of the news from the world of Czech business, for which I'm joined by Jan Richter.
The governor of the Czech National Bank, Miroslav Singer, expects the continuing growth of the Czech economy to positively affect the country's labor market. In an address to MPs on Friday, Mr. Singer said signs of improvement had already been registered as the unemployment rate is slowly decreasing and demand for part-time jobs has eased. In August, unemployment stagnated at 7.4%. The central bank expects GDP growth of 3% this year, mainly fueled by investments reflecting revived foreign demand. It also foresees higher government spending and household consumption.
The Czech Republic is increasingly attractive for international manufacturing companies. That's according to a report by real estate consultancy JLL released this week. The country's industrial real estate market saw record growth last year when over 1 million square meters were leased to foreign firms, the report says. Among the manufacturers that recently moved production to the Czech Republic are the auto interior producer Johnson's Controls and Smith's Medical, which produces medical instruments and equipment. JLL say that inexpensive skilled labor, quality infrastructure and geographical location, as well as a recent increase in the German minimum wage, have contributed to the trend.
More than 871,000 cars were produced in the Czech Republic in the first 8 months of the year, representing year-on-year growth of 11%. The news agency Cheteka reported this week, quoting figures from the country's Automotive Industry Association and individual car producers. In August, production slowed due to summer holiday shutdowns at production plants. Škoda Auto, the largest Czech car manufacturer, produced over 461,000 vehicles in the first 8 months of 2014, which is a 23% increase on the same period last year.
The Czech state-owned freight railway operator ČD Cargo has doubled its profits but lost market share, the daily Hospodářské noviny reported on Friday. The company's profits reached 540 million crowns in the first 6 months of the year. That's up from 300 million in the same period last year. However, revenues decreased by 5% between January and July. ČD Cargo blames this on growing competition among operators in the coal, lignite, iron and machinery transportation segments.
And Orco Property Group, a Luxembourg-based real estate and developer firm, is leaving the Prague Stock Exchange. The move, which was announced in July, comes after Orco saw its stocks plummet from an all-time high of 2,500 crowns per share, registered in 2007, to the current value of just 11 crowns. In 2011, the firm also exited the Budapest Bourse, though it continues to trade on the Paris and Warsaw exchanges. In the first 2 years after Orco started trading at the Prague Bourse in 2005, the firm's shares grew by 200%, but they have been steadily declining since. The company has also been struggling with poor results, registering a net loss of 54.4 million euros in the first quarter of the year.
We'll have more business news at the same time next week. But in the final part of our program today, we look at writers who were at the forefront of the Velvet Revolution. But when the dust settled on the political changes, they found a fast-changing publishing revolution underway, and it left some of them sidelined. We look at the changes in the publishing and literary world since the revolution in this edition of The Arts, which was produced by Chris Johnston.
The Velvet Revolution was, in many respects, about authors and words. Of course, there was the playwright dissident himself, Václav Havel, who came out of the shadows where he was put by the censors and persecution to lead the revolution that overthrew communism. Havel and other dissident writers were outside the state-controlled publishing system and had to rely on publication of their works abroad by publishing houses, mostly run by exiled Czechs, or at home as illegal samizdat versions. So it was no surprise that the impact of the revolution in the publishing and the literary world was fast and far-reaching. The carefully planned state system was ill-equipped to meet the demand for new books on everything from guidebooks to school textbooks and literary works not tainted by the recent past. One of the first to see the new opportunities was Jan Kanzelsberger, a bookshop manager under the state system. He jumped at the chance to realise his dreams of launching his own chain of bookshops that would adopt the best from the West. The family business has evolved into the biggest Czech chain of bookshops, with around 40 outlets around the country. His son Jan, now one of the top managers of the family firm, remembers the early days.
In 1990, there was practically overnight change for the whole system. Before 1990, there was a planned economics, so it means that there were a strictly limited number of state-owned enterprises. It was a strictly limited number of titles planned for months in advance. And practically overnight, there were possibility to set up own business as a publishing house and to publish any book you wanted and to sell it anyhow you wanted. So it means that practically within 1 year, there was a change of number of publishers, beginning on, let's say, few, maybe 30, 34 publishing houses in Czechoslovakia, has changed within 1 year up to 3,000 of publishers practically overnight.
One of the first tasks of the new publishers was to meet the demand for those books that had been banned under communism. As Jan Kanzelsberger recalls, it was difficult to keep pace with the freedom frenzy.
There were huge amounts of copies sold. There was thousands and thousands of sold because there was a big, big hunger on such kind of literature, which was banned before 1990, and readers were hungry to read it and to get the books. So it was a big change within a very short period to switch on the new economics. Some of the publishers or the former state companies were not able to survive a very long period in this new time and new conditions. They were too fixed on planned economics that they cannot survive in the new style of free economics.
The demand for the forbidden fruit of the former regime's blacklisted authors continued for some time after the revolution, with what now appear to be astronomic sales figures being achieved. Jan Kanzelsberger recalls one trip to meet market demand.
I remember the first time my father, it was in the beginning of 1991, he was taking the van and traveling to Germany to exile publishing houses. He fulfilled the van of books. We stopped at the Wenceslas Square on the corner and we were selling practically directly from the van, and the van was sold out within a few hours. People were queuing and they were even not waiting. When we get the books inside of the bookshop, they were very crazy about to have such books. Within this year, the Czech publishing houses started to make reprints of those exile publishings, because the exile publishing has a quite small print run of such books. Of course, they were not prepared for have a big audience and big number of customers. So many of publishers started to, for example, book Černí baroni from Miroslav Švandrlík. It was one of the banned books. It was a humoristic book. And I think, as I remember, the first edition, first Czech free edition of this book was in 200,000 copies to be sold within 1 month or so, within a few weeks. It's, for example, it's the same amount of copies published of Harry Potter in Czech language. So it was, in that time, it was kind of Harry Potter.
Other changes were taking place as well. As well as the publishing business, the bookshop themselves began to be transformed. The communist-era sales counter operations, where an assistant would suggest what you select from the inaccessible stockroom, gave way to literary supermarkets where you filled your basket with the written word. Translated works from the West also began to become bestsellers and demanded a large part of the shelf length in the new-look bookshops. Under communism, foreign authors had been translated, even unlikely ones such as British author Evelyn Waugh, but not those who could represent an ideological challenge.
In a regular bookshop, we have one or two maximum bookshelves for Czech authors now, and about four, five or six bookshelves for the foreign authors translated into Czech language. So in the number of titles, you can see this proportion. But if you look at the top bestsellers, you see that maybe half of the top bestsellers are the Czech authors or the books by Czech authors. So we have to say that there is not so much Czech authors in the market, because we are a very small market with limited number of inhabitants in Czech Republic. And we have to translate the books and absorb books from abroad. But Czech authors are very, very favorite. And if the Czech author is a good one and well accepted, it has a quite long tradition and their own readers who always buy his new book.
If anything, Jan Kanzelsberger detects something of a dilution of the foreign invasion over recent years. He says that in the mid-1990s, almost any fairly well-known Western author was almost guaranteed to notch up respectable sales on the Czech market. Now, only the big names, such as Dan Brown, will get that star reception. The biggest Czech grouping of writers, Obec spisovatelů, or the Community of Writers, numbers around 650 members. Some of them are big names, such as Ivan Klíma, but many are less well-known, and writing is something in addition to the day job. From his perspective upstream in the literary production line, Chairman Vladimir Krivanek does not doubt that the Velvet Revolution was the right step, but still feels that the initial hopes for something different have been shortchanged.
If I had to evaluate all this, then I would have to say that the majority of us are convinced that the changes had to happen. Few of us would want to go back to the situation under the previous regime. The second thing is that we dreamed and imagined that this new world and state would be a bit different, and from time to time we are affected by a certain disappointment and disillusion. But I think this is a normal path.
Communist support for the literary world was generous, as long, of course, as you were willing to make compromises and toe the line. Mr. Krivanek says he did not seek to get his poems published in the 1970s because it was meaningless in the atmosphere of disillusion following the crushing of the Prague Spring in 1968. But he did get a collection of his works published at the end of the 1980s when there was a thaw in the literary world and powerful party-backed Writers' Guild. While he does not regret the liquidation of the guild, Mr. Krivanek does feel that the removal of state support for writers went too far after the revolution.
After 1989,
perhaps we pointlessly gave up some of our economic benefits. Certainly the guild had to be dissolved because it was immoral, but I think they could have transferred a bit of their property. Instead, here we are set up as a civic association so that we could not be tarnished. So now we are clean, but poor.
Takže jsme čistí a chudí.
Mr. Krivanek describes the contemporary setup in the Czech Republic as pretty uncultured. He points out that there is not even a law in place calling for the state to support culture. Apart from that, he says the broader Czech literary scene is handicapped by serving a small, local language market in which writers struggle to get noticed on a broader stage. He maintains that there are a handful of contemporary Czech poets who would be global stars if they had been born in an English-speaking country. As well as this, he says the massive worldwide publishing industry seeks to push foreign bestsellers on the back of formidable marketing muscle.
As for demanding artistic literary work as a whole, there is not much of that left. It is often translations. We read translations and translate a lot. I have the impression sometimes that we often translate overrated bestsellers. I sometimes have the feeling we feed ourselves with the waste of U.S. culture. Unfortunately, that is how it is. Maybe it is not a popular thing to say, but whatever is regarded as an interesting title in the U.S. is translated here within a year and backed up with massive marketing. That is the bestsellers. The overall choice is enormous, but it is also a bit false. 90% of the offer is low-level literary rubbish, factual works or second-rate historical novels and such like.
With around 500 new titles appearing in Czech bookshops every day, the market has certainly turned a page in terms of quantity. But there are certainly those who would argue whether there has been a corresponding increase in quality.
That edition of The Arts was first broadcast in the year 2009. If you've got any comments about today's programme, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and on Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.